First doing an informational session. Yes. Okay. And we're going to continue the informational session on water measurement. And I'm going to ask Barry Norris and Debbie Colbert from the Water Resources Department to come back up. And I apologize, but I'm going to ask you, since several of the members were missing last week, and I see that Representative Smith has left. I got to keep track of that guy. There he is. So I'm going to ask you if you could start at the beginning of your presentation again and maybe just quickly walk through it, because I think it's good, important information. And also, we have a lot of folks in the room who probably are interested in hearing that as well. So thank you. I appreciate you coming back.
Madam Chair, thank you very much for having us today. Again, for the record, I'm Debbie Colbert with the Water Resources Department. And I just wanted to note that we're passing out more copies of the PowerPoint and also a short memo that provides some follow-up from Monday's discussion. And we won't go into detail on those responses at this time, but we'll try to work them into as we work through the PowerPoint presentation today.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Madam Chair, I'm Barry Norris, and I work for Water Resources Department. We have our measuring program at the Water Resources Department collects data for a number of purposes. Allocating the supplies and distribution regulation, early warning systems for flood and drought, forecasting, evaluation of long-term trends, and so on. When we collect our hydrographic data, we separate into three groups for ease of understanding. The first group we collect is live stream flow measurements that give you an instantaneous flow rate. It's in terms of cubic feet per second, CFS. We use a current meter to collect that data typically. For staff gauges, we use that when we're rating a gauging station or a staff gauge or collecting miscellaneous measurements around the state or for seepage runs when we're trying to make a determination of the interaction between surface water and groundwater. The second category we put our hydrographic data into would be units of volume, where we collect in terms of acre feet for storage behind dams, and it's also used when we define water rights for a total duty during an irrigation season is defined in terms of acre feet, an acre feet being 1 acre of ground, 1 foot depth of water. Third category is feet below land surface for measurement of our groundwater aquifer system. We just go out to wells where we have access and put a well tape down into the well where we hit water level while we measure feet below land surface. And where we can, we tie all those wells together in relationship to the mean sea level, and then we can have a well net that relates to itself. Diversions range in size all the way from the Owyhee Dam over on in eastern Oregon, that's 417 feet in height and pounds 715,000 acre feet. The upper right-hand corner to the lower left, which is a pump that may be diverting something in the neighborhood of 5 or 10 gallons per minute out of a stream bed. All types of configurations for diversion structures, like flash dams that can be lowered during the non-irrigation season, raised back up the upper left-hand corner, to actual concrete structures that permanently divert the water and may have a lower level outlet and push the water into a canal system. Our total number of diversions, including groundwater, surface water, and storage, are 122,562 points of diversion in the state. You can see that 7,991, just under 8,000 are required to have a measuring device. 3,697 required to record, 3,544 required to record and report their water use. And then ground wells, we have 2,842 that are required to report annually the water level in the aquifer. Now, we were asked last meeting, your last meeting, why the difference between required to report versus required to record. We have guidelines for conditions on our permits according to the size of the diversion rate. The smallest diversion rate, it's described in your memo, the smallest diversion rate, we have a condition that says we may require a measuring device, we may require recording, and we may require reporting later. The mid-sized are we require the measuring device, but future recording and reporting may be required, and then the larger diversions required to measure, record, and report. It's a matter of primarily, I guess, of staff resources to handle all the data that comes in is one of the reasons there's a difference. When we measure stream flow, or we have, I should say, 200, we have 210 stream gauging stations that we operate around the state that collect data on 15-minute increments 24 hours a day. 94 of those gauges have telemetry. That's a telemetered site there in the lower right-hand corner. You can see the aerial and the solar panels that produce the power. At each one of those gauging stations, we visit them on an average of once every 6 weeks to maintain the rating curve and to maintain the equipment inside. This is a map of our active gauging stations around the state, 210 sites that we operate. Now, this is a map of all of the gauging stations that have been, that are in operation or have been discontinued over the years. Now, this is a includes some stations, a lot of stations that were one time operated by our department, and then the USGS might have taken them over and operated them for a while. Maybe we took them over again and operate them now, or they've been completely discontinued. But at all of these sites, we have hydrographic information that's available over our web. Question last time, how many gauges does the USGS operate? I gave them a phone call. They operate about 220 gauges statewide currently. During the last 2 years, we have our agency has a well net of about of 743 wells that we have measured with some frequency. In addition to this, we have, of course, thousands of water level measurements that we've made around the state, and they also, of course, are available through our website for anybody that's interested in that kind of information.
Again, we were just going to tell you a little bit about how we started using new technology over time to make our program more efficient to collecting water measurement data.
During the last century, on the left side, that's an what's called an A35 recorder, mechanical recorder. It recorded water level by means of a float that was operated in a culvert pipe located vertically in the stream bed, so the float moved up and down. And the recorder recorded the height of the water level by means of ink on the chart, and it just continuously recorded. Those still work, but obviously they have problems, mechanical failures, the floats hang up, and so on. Our most recent evolution to electronic recorders is on the right-hand side. You can see that on the bottom is a modem that's transmitted either a landline or cell phone or telemetry through a satellite system. We have a recording device, and then this instrument here is for measuring water levels, not with a float, but with a bubble system or pressure transducer that's located in the bottom of the stream, so there are less mechanical moving parts. They don't require as much service. We have less lost data. They operate a lot better. We also have migrated from a flow meter, a AA-type flow meter with all the moving parts, to an acoustic velocity meter. It's called a flow tracker. Less moving parts. The old style of measuring high flows or streams where we couldn't wade was by use of a cableway, lowering the AA meter down with a weight. We have evolved from that to what's called a river cat that does both a profile of the stream bed as well as a average velocity through that section by simply pulling it back and forth across the stream bed.
We also wanted to highlight for the committee just a couple of examples where we have some pretty extensive measurement networks and partnerships with other federal and state and local groups.
This is a web-based system in the Rogue Basin where you can see, go to the website, you can see that all the reservoirs, you can get reservoir content. Each one of the red dots is a gauging station that you can click on and find out what the live flow is there at that time. It's a cooperative agreement between the Corps of Engineers, the Bureau of Reclamation, private irrigation districts. It's operated and maintained through a cooperative agreement between the Bureau and our department.
Just also to note, for a portion of that, the Bear Creek system, all of the measuring, in-stream measuring devices are also equipped with temperature probes as part of a cooperative effort with Department of Environmental Quality, and were also built so that they could accommodate additional water quality devices over time.
Yeah, just to orient you, this is Little Butte Creek, Antelope Creek, and Bear Creek that flow into the Rogue River, and here's White City. Medford's just upstream of the confluence on Bear Creek, down the Rogue Basin. List of cooperators in the Rogue Basin, and I just add also that Southern Oregon University uses this gauge site right here. It was put in and is operated by our Watermaster in the Rogue Basin, but they use it extensively for research. They use it all the time. It's got a number of different parameters besides stage. And I'd also add, too, that the gauges that Debbie was referring to with the temperature probes, those were done with a grant from DEQ, so that's a cooperative effort with one of our sister agencies. Another similar system is over in the Malheur Basin. It's just the same thing. It's operated cooperatively with the Bureau of Reclamation. The red dots above and below the reservoirs are gauging stations where you can get live flow at any time, and then you can also get real-time, near real-time water levels in the reservoirs.
In addition to these kind of extensive networks in specific geographic areas, we wanted to also highlight a couple of examples where we've, for specific management reasons, done enhanced measurement.
In the Umatilla Basin are the two examples we're going to talk about. The first is on the Umatilla River and the water exchange with the Columbia River. This is the Umatilla River coming through the Umatilla Basin out into the Columbia River. OWRD had originally, about a decade or two decades ago, I guess, proposed a serious water management area in that area, and a task force was created that wanted an alternative to regulation. And so they got together a number of water interests in the basin and developed a water management plan. And as a result, every water user along that stretch of river measures their water that's 10 gallons per minute or more. In various ways, there were 66 measurement and water control devices that were installed, including flow meters and weirs and submerged orifices. There are also four gauging stations. Two FTEs are funded by the Bureau of Reclamation, plus another FTE funded by the county operate the system, and it's been real successful in the basin exchange program. The other area we wanted to talk about is the Walla Walla River, where the U.S. Fish and Wildlife had proposed an enforcement action against two irrigation districts in the Milton Freewater area for an alleged violation of the Endangered Species Act. The Walla Walla Basin Watershed Council sought and obtained funding through OWEB to purchase head gates and measuring devices, and the Natural Resource Conservation Service provided engineering. As a result, 38 diversions were measured using ramp flumes and weirs and flow meters. Different types of flow meters that are available. This is a flow meter. It's, of course, measures flow through a pipe system, and you can get instantaneous flow as well as the cumulative acre feet or total volume during a period of time. This is a submerged orifice, a type of a measuring device that needs to be rated, but it's typically when the water level is above the submerged orifice, there's a defined opening down below the water level, and we can rate the amount of water that flows through that opening at various head differences in head. As the water level moves up and down, we know what the rating is. So we can put a recording device or read a staff gauge, and by knowing the water level with a good rating curve, we know how much water is flowing through that submerged orifice and out into the canal.
Going to remind the audience, if you have a cell phone or a pager or a BlackBerry on, can you please turn it off because our audio equipment picks it up, and that's what that buzzing is. So just a reminder, if anyone has a phone or a BlackBerry on, could turn it off. We appreciate it. Thank you.
This gives you an idea when we talk about flumes, what a flume is. These are ramp flumes. They've just really been devised here in the last about 15 years or so. Used to use a lot of what were called partial flumes. But these are much easier to install because you don't have to have as much head, much difference in elevation through the flume. You have to take a lot of caution in locating them. They have to be located in a manner that has the right configuration upstream and downstream from the flume. Of course, they have to be put in level. And sometimes they do require a maintained rating depending on how much channel change and foliage differences there is through the season. But they're very effective, a very good means for measuring water. And I guess I just point out that the difference, sometimes some people get confused when we talk about head gates and measuring devices. A head gate is put in place to control the amount of water that moves into a canal from a stream, but it doesn't necessarily measure that amount of water. So we can screw the gate down and vary the amount of water that's getting into the canal system with a head gate. It needs a measuring device to know how much water that is.
I think we just wanted to finish our presentation with some thoughts on areas for, you know, a need for increased measurement across the state and tell you a little bit about our commission and department's approach for increasing measurement.
This slide shows you a water availability model that our results from the water availability model that we've developed for statewide appropriation of surface water. The brown indicates that no water is available for appropriation. It's the stream system's fully appropriated at 80% exceedance. And there are 12 maps, and you can see that for each one of the months. So, for instance, trying to find July. Right in here. Right here. I can't see long distances and I can't see short distances. Anyway, the brown color shows you that during the month of July there's a little bit of water available in the Willamette system, a little bit up in the very northeast corner of the state, and a little bit on the coast, but the state's pretty much fully appropriated. That indicates that we have a lot of distribution in the state because during that time of year because of our priority system. So, of course, measurement will aid in that, aids in that endeavor, and that's why we have measuring devices where we have conflicts with water. This map gives you, that's easier for me to see. This map gives you an idea of areas in the state that are affected by in-stream water rights and scenic waterways, and you can see that just about the entire state is. There are no scenic waterways or in-stream water rights in these two closed basins. And this shows you where those scenic waterways are located, 20 reaches around the state.
And then lastly, just wanted to highlight, since 2001, our Water Resources Commission adapted a strategy for increasing water use measurement statewide. And their approach has been to kind of major on the majors. I mean, at least that's how we describe it. So, and it's been linked to our Oregon Plan for Salmon and Watershed efforts. And so we started by first trying to understand kind of where are some areas that have the greatest need, biological need for increased flows, and where we consider they have the greatest opportunity for flow restoration. And we worked jointly with the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife to identify these significant or priority watersheds statewide. Flip that for me, Barry. Through this joint effort of identifying watersheds where there was the greatest need for flow, we identified about 293 watersheds across the state. Those are highlighted in the green color. And then within each of these high priority watersheds, we did an inventory and assessment of what we call significant diversions in those watersheds. If you can flip those. And those are, we define significant diversions as diversions either that already had a measurement and reporting requirement
or were diversions that were more than 5 CFS, or had took more than 10% of the lowest mean monthly flow. So through this effort, we basically were looking for diversions that either were larger or had the greatest impact on the stream. Through that prioritization and inventory effort, we identified about 2,400 significant diversions across the state. And in these areas, if you can go ahead. In these areas, what we've been working on over the last several years is first identifying all of those significant diversions and then visiting as many of those diversions as possible. We've completed about 90% of the site visits of those 2,400 diversions. The last 10% that we haven't completed really are related to kind of access to the property. But as part of the next step of implementing this strategic approach, we're going to be working with those diversions that already have reporting requirements to make sure they're in compliance with their measurement and reporting requirements. And then we're also going to be working with the other water users to see if we can increase measurement in these priority areas across the state. And that concludes our presentation, and we'd be happy to take any questions.
Okay, great. We'll take a quick few questions from the committee members, and then we have a couple more people that wanted to come up for the informational that was left over from last time, and then we'll open up for public testimony. And we have a lot of people that have signed up, so we want to make sure we get, especially folks who came from far. So there's some questions. Representative Cannon.
Yeah, and thank you both, and Debbie. Thank you, and your staff in particular, for your patience. And I was going to say, with me learning these issues and the repeated sort of education that you're giving to us up here is very, very helpful. I really do appreciate your patience as I try to get a handle on this. I'm particularly interested in this last set of slides related to the priority watersheds and the measurement that's going on there. And can you tell us of those those priority watersheds and the significant diversions, the 2,400 you mentioned, what percentage of those are being measured currently?
Madam Chair, Representative, of the 2,400 that we've identified that meet this category, about 20% are already required to measure and report. So about 50, I'd estimate, are already required to measure and report. And it's that other 80% that we're going to be working with to see if we can increase measurement at those diversions.
Follow-up? And of those 80%, are they required to measure now and aren't actually measuring? Are you what's the plan, and what's the status of that 80%? Are they under a requirement that they just have not yet met? Or are you working towards that requirement? What's the status of that remaining 80%?
Madam Chair, Representative, I mean, that's a very good question. Those other 80% are not currently required by permit condition or by requirement of the Water Master to measure or measure and report. And so that's their current status. And then as part of our kind of incremental approach, we will be working within each of those priority watersheds to try to have those diversions move forward with some type of measuring devices.
One more follow-up.
Okay, last
follow-up.
Last follow-up.
Have you required any of those that didn't already have a diversion to or have a measurement? Sorry, to become measured. Have you applied that requirement to any of those 80% that weren't already required by a condition of their permit?
Madam Chair, Representative, I don't know what percent we actually have required through other authorities, but I can tell you that in the last 5 years, our water masters have some specific statutory authority that they can require a head gate and measuring device at a diversion. And in the last 5 years, we've done about 250 of those orders from our water master, and it varies across the state. And so some of those were, in fact, in those significant diversion areas.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions for the department before we go on? Representative Jensen and Representative Smith.
What current conditions would trigger measurement in the other 80% that are not currently required?
Madam Chair, Representative, we have a couple different authorities where we can go in and require a measuring device at those diversions that don't currently have a condition to measure. One of them is the authority of our water master to basically do a head gate notice and require measurement. We also have some programs that Barry can jump in and add to. We also have some broad authority to do serious water management problem areas, referred to as SWAMPAs, where we can go in and on kind of a whole geographic area require measurement. So those are just two statutory authorities that we have that we could require measurement at those diversions.
Follow-up?
Madam Chair, follow-up. That wasn't the question. The question is what conditions would trigger.
Madam Chair, Representative, sorry that I didn't get it the first time. What conditions? Basically, each of those authorities have different conditions that trigger them. So our Water Master Authority, anytime the Water Master feels that measurement is necessary for management of the water, then we can move forward and use that authority. So it's relatively broad. For the purposes of water management and distribution, the Water Master can require measurement, head gate measurement. And then the serious water management problem area, the trigger for those, and maybe Barry, you can help me out, the trigger for those by statute.
Well, serious water, Madam Chair, Representative Jensen, the serious water management area is an authority that was given to the department where in areas where we felt we needed to have comprehensive management in order to distribute the water equitably, in order to get hydrologic data so we could develop a water budget for the basin, just in areas where we felt we needed that data to do an adequate job of resource management, then we can define it by administrative boundary and require people to measure it. I think maybe... Excuse me.
Follow up.
You understand that any time you're talking about we felt is inclined to give a lot of people a lot of heartburn. If you don't have some quantifiable sort of reasons or rationale for it, you're calculated to alienate those people or those groups of people who happen to be affected by how we feel. Some mornings, when my wife is not very kind to me and doesn't feed me breakfast, I don't feel good. And I'd hate, and I realize the Water Resource Department would never stoop to such such things as, but what we feel is not adequate. I'm sorry.
Madam Chair, Representative Jensen, good point, and I took it very well. I understand what you mean. I just wanted to add that enacting a serious water management problem area is a public process. It requires hearings and development of rules, so we would have to have much more than a feeling. I shouldn't have said it, put it that way. We would have to have some pretty valid reasons, some valid reasons. Sorry, I tend to qualify that, and it shouldn't be qualified. We would have valid reasons. We would present them, and we'd go into a public debate as to whether or not it needed to be done.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm new to this issue, and so please allow me just a green question, if I may. Those waters that are not being measured currently, what's been the effect on the state of Oregon of not being able to measure them?
Madam Chair, Representative, I hope that I can answer this question. I think that the concerns that others might have is that by not having those measured,
Let me restate my question. What has been the effect on the state of Oregon, not what others may say, on the state of Oregon of not being able to measure them?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, the effect is that in some cases when we go out and regulate, it's disputable, so it takes longer. We have to, for instance, do a series of of our own measurements rather than getting measurements on a routine basis from others. So it costs us time. It costs us resources, and we're already an agency that has scarce resources. When we do a hydrologic study, it takes us longer to complete a study in order to get all of the data that we need to defend what our conclusions are in that study. More data is always better. More accurate data is always better to support a hydrologic study and develop a water budget for a basin than less data, so it's more defensible. Those are just two examples.
Just one last follow-up. Just so I'm clear, I just want to make sure I understand this. So the cause and effect on the state of Oregon of not being able to measure is that it's affected your department's ability to regulate, and it results in additional costs in time and money.
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, we're still able to regulate. It's just that it's a more involved process, so it costs more time, rather than knowing exactly what the quantity of water is diverted and how to come up with a water budget for the system. When the water master goes in and does a regulation on a stream system, he distributes that water according to data priority. He needs to know what each one of the diversions are and how much they're diverting and their data priority, so he can give people water that they're entitled to. So it takes more time to go out and do that measurement. When we do the hydrologic studies, more data gives a more defensible and a more hydrologic-based result on the investigation.
Thank you
for the clarification. Appreciate it. I know that we'll have more discussions on this, so I appreciate you coming here and sharing this information not once but twice, Barry. So please stick around in case there's other questions. We're going to have quickly Julie Keel from PGE and Wally Otto, who was supposed to be here. We ran out of time last time, so I'm going to ask them to come up, quickly give their comments, and then we're going to open up the public hearing. And is Wally here?
Yeah.
Wally, I don't think I've seen you in about 10 years. Okay. Thank you. Yeah, why don't both of you come up, and I'm just going to ask maybe Wally if we can just go through your PowerPoint fairly quickly at the end. And thank you, Julie. And for the record, can you please identify yourself and your organization? Go ahead.
My name is Julie Keil. Last name is K-E-I-L. I'm the Director of Water Rights and Hydro Licensing for Portland General Electric Company.
Yeah, why don't you go ahead, Julie, and give your... are you guys together?
No,
really,
but I thought you wanted him to go first. I'm
Go ahead. He'll get his PowerPoint all
okay.
Set up.
I was going to say thank you to the Water Resources Department for leaving up the pretty pictures. Now it turns out I'm not going to get them. I guess I want to start out by saying that what we do with relationship to our hydroelectric system may not be relevant to some of the other issues that you're considering. And so you have to take all of this with somewhat of a grain of salt. I am going to be brief because I know you have some folks here who are desperate to tell you what they think of this bill. And I don't happen to be one of them. But I do want to thank you for the opportunity to come and share today. We have 5 licensed hydroelectric projects on the Deschutes, the Sandy, the Willamette, and the Clackamas Rivers. You might notice that all of those are involved with wild and scenic rivers, which has a lot to do with our gauging and measuring systems. So I'm going to tell you briefly today, very briefly, what we do about measurement and why. A large part of our system is driven by the USGS gauging system. And given the amount we spend every year, I sometimes feel like I must be funding about all of those 200-plus gauges that the USGS has deployed in the state, but I'm sure that's not true. We paid in 2006 $163,000 to the USGS for gauging on our system. We also have a system of reservoir level monitors that allow us to, as the name says, tell what level our reservoirs are at and whether within bounds of what our licenses require there. A lot of our flow measurement is back calculated from generation. That is to say, we know how much generation we get from a given turbine for a certain CFS that we put through it. So we know that if we generate a certain amount, it took a certain amount of water. The units are all indexed that way, so we can tell how much water we're putting through units. What we don't do is real-time flow measurement. For the volumes that we're dealing with, the smallest project that we operate runs on about 40 CFS. Flow measurement just doesn't make any sense for us. It's not any more accurate than what we do already, so that's not part of the system. The question is why? Why do we do this when many water users do not engage in this level of measurement and reporting? The first simple answer is we're required to. I don't want to come off like the shining knight here. Our FERC licenses require that we know how much water goes through our projects. They require that we know how much water we have in our canals. They require that we know what level our reservoirs are at on a pretty much instantaneous basis. We have minimum flow requirements below all our projects. Those requirements are instantaneous measurements. Any moment of any day, we have to be in compliance with our minimum flow requirements. It also allows us to make sure that we're making an efficient use of a very valuable public resource. We take the trust that we're given by the people of Oregon to use the water very seriously, and knowing how much water we're using for a given amount of generation allows us to make judgments about efficiency and whether we're doing a good job with that. It allows us to keep our records together about water rights that we may have to prove up in the future. A good number of our projects operate on what are known as pre-1909 water rights. Before the water code in Oregon was enacted, they are what are called inchoate water rights, and at some point we're going to have to prove it. So water measurement and water record keeping allows us to keep those water rights valid and upright. As I said, it allows us to ensure compliance with our licenses, both how much water we're allowed to run through units and whether or not we're in compliance with our minimum flow requirements. Importantly, it allows us to let other people know whether the in-stream water rights below our projects are being met or not met, and what that tells us about the fisheries resources in our in the stretches that we affect. So that's the sort of long and short of PGE's water measuring system. Madam Chair, representatives, I'm happy to answer questions if you have any.
Okay. Any quick questions before we move on? Representative Smith?
Thank you. Five dams? Is that what I heard, five dams?
Yep.
On? How many personnel are involved in your water reporting system?
There are probably, out of that system, I would think it's probably two or three people full-time, full-time equivalents of folks who are involved in keeping all of that up and running and making sure it's right.
So just I'm sorry, with five locations, two or three personnel.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks.
Great. Yep. Thank you. Well, we lost some of our committee members. Any questions down there? Okay. Thank you. Wally, if you can, I'm going to ask you to be brief because we're sort of running short of time, and I do want to thank you for coming. I worked, many of you know, I was the coordinator for the Tualatin Watershed Council and worked very closely with the irrigation district there and the water master, who's now the water manager for Eastern Oregon, actually, Mr. Rogers, who taught me a lot. Used to go on trips with him a lot as water master. So I really appreciate my old irrigation district being here, so thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm here to represent the Tualatin Valley Irrigation District. We're located off of the Tualatin River on a tributary, Scoggins Creek, and we supply water to the largest portion of our water is supplied to the Irrigation District. We also supply water to the municipalities of Forest Grove, Hillsborough, Beaverton, and other cities in between. And that would provide water to Clean Water Services for flow augmentation as well to the Tualatin River. We are 100% measured from beginning to end. And just a little bit of a quick overview of our of the irrigation district. You can see here from this, our highest use goes towards corn, and then the second highest is towards nursery and flowers. But that doesn't mean that they get a higher rate. They still are required to fall into the same category as everyone else, as the turf, yard, and garden. Everybody is entitled to the same amount. Everybody pays for the same amount, but no one gets more. So the ones that are using the highest amount have to be extremely cautious and careful with it. Every drop counts, and from that, we start out from the very beginning, and let me just say, I better define some acronyms here so that everybody knows. NRCS is National Resource Conservation Service. You've probably seen them up measuring snow on Mount Hood on TV. USBR is United States Bureau of Reclamation. TVID is my organization, Tuolumne Valley Irrigation District. At any given time, we know how much snow is in the watershed. We know we're not. We don't care how much the depth is. What we want to know is how much water is in the snow, and that's what these gentlemen are doing here. As that snow begins to melt, it runs down and it's caught and measured through staff gauges and other things similar to what Barry described earlier. As this gauge, which is from the USGS, and you can see that we're working with a number of different entities here, and all of a sudden now we've bumped up to the USGS, United States Geological Service, and the Corps of Engineers, and TVID as well. Our storage, you can see, comes from out of this watershed, and as you can see, the way it's being logged, various parts melt very quickly. The snow comes off quick. Where the trees are, it hangs on. So it provides a challenge to just store it behind this dam and then have it available for when we need it during those low summer months. By the way, the Tualatin River is 100% appropriated. By that I mean that there are no water rights being issued, and that's been that way since the late 1980s. So how do we're monitoring, we're measuring the water in storage behind the reservoir, and as Barry showed you, we have telemetry here that shoots out to the GOES satellite, and we can monitor that. If I could bring it up on my computer right here and know exactly the conditions going on and the whole system from top end to the bottom end because of the telemetry system installed. The discharge from the reservoir is measured through this gauging station, similar to one Barry pointed out earlier. And all of a sudden here, now you see OWRD. They now are measuring this one. They've taken this station over from USGS. And to make sure that measurements are accurate, we run this discharge through a weir concrete channel so that it doesn't change, and we know that it remains the same at all times. We have easy and quick access to the data. We pump that water out as it flows from the reservoir, then we pump it out in the Tualatin River at this pumping plant facility. There are 9 pumps in here. These are 350 horse pumps in the foreground, and 5 1,500 horse pumps in the background. So we have a significant impact on the river. If we don't have the water in the river is going to just drop right out. So we have to have the water there when it's needed. And we know that by telemetry system and also these flow meters that are right there. We know how much water is being used so we can have it on site in time. As the water moves through the system, it comes to the irrigator's land. And this is a typical TVID delivery. This turnout box, and inside that turnout box, you'll see numerous, several different gauges. The one on the left is coming into the box. The line has 150 pounds of pressure because of those pumps and gravity feed. And as it comes in, the irrigator can take that handle over there on the right, and he can adjust the amount of flow he wants to go out onto his crop. And he can use those other gauges to meter the amount of water that he's using and also to adjust the pressure that he wants. Some crops have to have very low pressure. Others can handle very great. And he can keep track of, as well as, obviously, the irrigation district. We can keep track of what his use is right here through these meters. This is what it looks like when it gets out from the box and it's out going on the end product. So this is where it's all the way from the top end of the watershed down to the field getting in. Metering protects a valuable and essential natural resource for us all, and that's our water. And we at Tuolumne Valley Irrigation District are 100% metered from top to bottom, right out to the very end. This happens to be blueberries right here. And we have... for example, one drop, just something that you can relate to, a drop of water dripping from your faucet at a rate of one drop per hour, or one drop a minute, I'm sorry, one drop a minute, over a year will equate to 2,400 gallons. Now, that doesn't sound like much, 2,400 gallons, but you can, if you divide that out and put that into an acre foot, as Barry described before, that's an acre with 1 foot deep of water. If 135 of your neighbors have that same dripping faucet, you will have wasted down the drain 1 acre foot of water. We consider metering of the water very important and valuable to the running of our operation.
Okay, thank you, Wally. And just to clarify, irrigation districts are required to measure under Oregon statute currently.
Madam Chair, that is correct.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for Wally before we have the virtual tour of the Tualatin Valley? I really appreciate it and appreciate Pathy coming here. Sorry we had to hold you over from, Monday. Okay, with that, I'm going to close the informational session on water measurement and open up a public hearing on House Bill 2564. I'd like to invite up first John Barkley and Rick George from the Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla, who have traveled over 100 miles and indicated they need to leave right after this. So why don't you come up, sit next to Wally if he's not done yet.
I just got to get out of it.
Thank you. You're not Rick.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, as the committee will recognize, I am not Rick George. Unfortunately, Rick had to travel to an appointment at the Grand Ronde and had to squeeze out of here about 5 minutes ago. My name is Phil Donovan. I'm the Government Affairs Representative for the Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla Indian Reservation. And with me to make remarks on behalf of the Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla is John Barkley, a member of the elected Board of Trustees for our tribe.
Thank you. John? Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair Dinkfelder and members of the committee. It's certainly an honor to be here today to testify for this committee. And as the General Counsel Chairman for the tribes and a representative on our tribal governing body, the Board of Trustees, I also want to let you know that I've served in the capacity as our Water Commission Vice Chairman for the last 8 years. So I've been very involved in water issues in our basin and in other areas. Of course, water is a primary concern for our tribe, and its quality and its quantity, as well as its availability. And it's very integral part of our culture and our economy, our religion and our traditions. Because so many basins in the state are over-appropriated, including the Umatilla River Basin, there is not enough cool, clean water for a coexistence of salmon, which is very important for our people, agriculture in our communities. And in some cases, there's not even enough clean water for municipal and domestic use, if you're familiar with the issues that we have in the lower basin. I've come here from Pendleton today to testify before your committee on behalf of our tribes, the Cayuse, Umatilla, Walla Walla, in support of House Bill 2564. We believe that water quantity is the heart of the complex problems surrounding water availability. How can we ever expect to fix that problem when we do not know how much water is being taken out of rivers and streams? That is why the new monitoring requirements proposed in this bill is critical to crafting a long-term solution. In our view, it is fair and reasonable to require water users to install monitoring equipment and make regular reports to OWRD to ensure that they are not taking more than their legal right, thereby a level playing field for all users up and downstream, and especially for those junior rights holders. Further, this bill is flexible in its allowance of 5 years for existing water users to comply with the new monitoring requirements. And I speak from experience with our successes in the Umatilla River Basin, namely the Phases 1 and 2 of the Umatilla Basin Project, which you all may be familiar with, that prior to our success in restoring stream flows and recovering salmon, the first prerequisite to any restoration work was to install monitors and track the movement of water. Had monitoring not come first, we would not today have stream flows and salmon back in the Umatilla River. We've had as high as up to 30,000 spring Chinook return into our tributary, which exhibits a significant collaborative effort on behalf of the stakeholders in the basins that still was able to sustain the agricultural economy in the basin and restore salmon into our tributary. Regular monitoring and reporting to OWRD will give the agency a basis on which to enforce against those in noncompliance, because water is simply a scarce and finite resource for us that we need to keep close tabs on every drop. This bill is practical, necessary, and responsible means of water management for the benefit of our citizens, and more importantly for the children and our future generations and for future growth and development. So I thank you for this opportunity, Madam Chair and committee members, and offer the assistance of the Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla Indian Reservation. And thank you again for testifying here on behalf of my tribes, and we're happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you so much. We appreciate you coming all the way from Pendleton today. Are there any questions? Okay. Great. Thank you. I know you have to go off to another meeting, so I appreciate it.
It was a beautiful drive.
Thank you.
Especially in the gorge. Thank you.
I know Senator Whitsett is here and wanted to come up and testify. And then we're going to go on to folks who came over 100 miles, and we have some folks on the phone that are going to be calling in. Welcome, Senator. Thanks for coming.
Thank you, Chair Treme, members of the committee.
Actually, it's Dingfelder.
I'm sorry.
Okay. Different woman.
Yeah, different lady. Different lady. Both. For the record, my name is Doug Whitsett. I'm a state senator from District 28. Thank you for accommodating my schedule, Chair Dingfelder. Madam Chair, there is little expressed need and even less public benefit to HB 2564. However, the cost to those who put Oregon's water to beneficial use will be enormous. Capital costs over the first 5 years will be in the magnitude of hundreds of millions of dollars. Ongoing maintenance and reporting costs will be in the magnitude of tens of millions of dollars. The fiscal cost to the state will be in the tens of millions, a cost that will be ongoing and rolled up each budget cycle. House Bill 2564 is unnecessary because the Oregon Water Resources Department already has authority to require water measurements of surface, stored, and groundwater when needed. ORS 537.211 states in relevant part, the approval of an application shall be set forth in a water right permit issued by the Water Resources Department. The permit shall specify the detail of the authorized use and shall set forth any terms, limitations, and conditions as the department considers appropriate. ORS 540.310(2) states in relevant part, the owner shall construct and maintain suitable measuring devices at such points along the ditch as may be necessary to assist the water master in determining the amount of water that is to be diverted into the ditch from the stream. ORS 540.320 states in relevant part, if any owner of irrigation districts, irrigation works, refuses or neglects to construct head gates, flumes, or measuring devices as required by ORS 540.310, the water master may close the ditch, and it shall not be opened for any water diverted from the source of supply until the requirement of the Water Resources Commission have been complied with. Perhaps more importantly, ORS 540.435 states in part, if the Commission finds accurate water use information necessary because of serious water management problems created by groundwater decline, the Commission by rule may require a water right owner using any surface or groundwater source within the state to install a totalizing measuring device and to submit annually a water use report. Pursuant to that statutory authority, Madam Chair, Oregon Administrative Rule 690.250 0006 states in relevant part, water use controlling devices and or measuring devices shall be required when necessary for regulation or management purposes. When, in the water master's judgment, it becomes necessary to require such devices, the water master shall use a notice form furnished by the Water Resources Department. Also, Oregon Administrative Rule 6902500060, Part 2 states in relevant part, if the appropriator refuses or neglects to construct or install the required water use control measuring devices, the water master may close the diversion or open the reservoir outlet or regulate the controlling works of a well. Madam Chair, it certainly appears that the Oregon Water Resources Department has full authority to regulate the measurement of water whenever the Oregon Water Resources Department finds it necessary in a local area. I urge a no vote on HB 2564. And Madam Chair, a number of citizens have traveled a great distance to be here today to share their thoughts regarding HB 2564. I do ask that you please find time to accommodate your testimony. Some of these folks have driven well in excess of 400 miles to be here today through winter conditions. Well, thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator, and that's exactly what we're going to do next, so I appreciate it. And are there any questions for the Senator?
Thank you.
Okay, thank you for coming in. I know you're in another hearing, so we appreciate you coming over.
Thanks, Madam.
Thank you. So next I'd like to call up some of those folks who put down their mileage, so I'm really impressed, because if we add it up, we'll have a lot of mileage here. First, I'm going to call up, and if you don't mind coming up together so we can just expedite and make sure that we get you up here. And help. I'm sorry if I'm not reading your names correctly. I'm trying to read the best I can. Lynn Shumway, I think. Lynn? And then I think it's Glenn Barrett. And just a reminder, if you could please state your name for the record. And if you do have any handouts, what they're doing is handing it to Ian, and then he'll make sure that we get copies. So appreciate you coming here today. I know you traveled far, and glad it was at least a nice day and not icy for you. Thank you, gentlemen. You can draw straws, and who goes first?
Well, Glenn said I could go first. Madam Chair, committee members, I do appreciate the opportunity to come and voice my concerns about this bill.
And can you, just a reminder, to state your name for the record?
Okay, I'm Lynn Shumway. I'm a lifelong cowboy rancher from Burnt River, Baker County. Also, I'm chairman of the Burnt River Irrigation District and have been for the past 16 or 17 years. I've been involved in a lot of water issues over the past number of years. I co-chaired the 1010 committee for the water quality plan. I was over here and lobbied for a study on the Burnt River for water quality, which Oregon State and the Bureau of Reclamation undertook with 14 agencies and organizations participating. And we have been very, very active in trying to be ahead of the curve when it comes to what is required. We've had a great working relationship with the Water Resources Department, our local water master, and the irrigation districts and the water masters in our area do a tremendous job of water, of measuring, and we have always done everything they required and tried to do a little bit more. But as this bill came to my attention at our irrigation board meeting last week, I asked our irrigation district manager, Jerry Franke, to prepare some comments since I didn't have the time to do it. So the comments that you have before you, I ask our manager to prepare. And as we looked at what is being proposed in this bill, and as the senator has just testified that the Water Resources Department. Thank you. That the authority is already there to require this monitoring and measuring. And so I looked and I says, are we trying to reinvent the wheel? And I look at the bill and it concerns me. I see that we're declaring an emergency on this and I say, where is the emergency? And then I see that at the end it says the act is necessary and immediate to the preservation of public peace, health, and safety. And I'm questioning, where is the emergency? Where is the need for this declaration for public safety? And back in the early days, one of the historians in our community recorded the fact that my granddad, an old Spanish-American War veteran, used to guard the head of his ditch with a 12-gauge shotgun. Those days are over. There really is no public safety issue here. There is no emergency. We have all of this is in place to do what is required here, what we're asking for. In the comments that I had our district manager prepare for you, just a little bit about our district. We're one of the smaller irrigation districts, 20,000 acres, but it does comprise probably 80% of all the irrigated ground in the Burnt River Basin. And we report the use throughout that basin. But the cost of doing what is asked in this bill, we have 184 points of diversion. Our responsibility is to deliver water to those private ditches. Each private ditch has multiple users that would then, who each have multiple points of diversion from those ditches. So the cost to our district would be astronomical. Jerry made an estimate here of $5 million. He's probably low. I'd visited with the manager of our local Farm Credit Services office in Baker City just last week. And he told me that currently in Baker County that it takes 75% of gross income just to cover operating expense. Burnt River is a little higher. Our growing season is a little shorter than the rest of the county. So we're more in the 80% bracket. And if you add this kind of burden upon our land use, on our water users, they're going to go under. And I've lived in that valley all my life. It is one of the best, friendliest places that you can ever live. We had a fellow move there from Nevada just last year. Sold a place in Nevada and he bought a ranch in the Upper Burnt River. But he's got cancer and he's having to sell the place. And he said, I hate to leave here because it's the friendliest place that I ever lived. And, you know, as I see that my family's livelihood is threatened, my community is threatened, the county is threatened, and our industry is threatened with what is being asked in this bill. And I look at the fact that there is no emergency. We already have the law that water resources can already require this measuring that this bill asks for. And I think back, what is the purpose behind this?
Mr. Shumway, can I just ask, we have a lot of people that want to testify, so I'm just going to ask if maybe you can conclude. We do have the testimony in front of you, and I want to make sure that especially the folks that are from far away get a chance to come up. So appreciate that.
Just in conclusion, this is a bill that is not necessary. The laws are already there to do what this is asking to do, and this would be a burden that would put a lot of good family operations out of business.
Thank you. And I do have a quick question because I was a little confused. My understanding, at least from the Water Resources Department, is that irrigation districts are already required to measure. So maybe you can clarify for the committee, since you're with the Burnt River Irrigation District, if you could clarify that, it would be helpful.
I am Chairman of Burnt River Irrigation District. We have a good working relationship with the Water Resources Department.
Okay. All right. Maybe I'll ask the Water Resources Department to come up and clarify. So, all right, thank you.
Madam Chair, I'm Glenn Barrett, President of Water for Life, and I'm a rancher in Lonzo Valley, which is on the east side of the Klamath Project, down in the good old place where there's hardly any conflict. I have great concerns with House Bill 2564 for several reasons, and I'll outline those in more detail. And also, Madam Chair, I'll try to keep this under 2 minutes and roll along.
Thank you.
I know you have my comments there, but for the record, I would like to read most of it.
Some of it. You're going to paraphrase.
Okay. I believe that this bill will actually hamper the great programs that are currently happening in Oregon that enhance wildlife while promoting sustainable food and fiber. Programs that have put this state in a federal recognition being green in a cooperative state. Also, I believe that this bill will put the state agencies in a micromanagement capacity that will be cost prohibitive both for the agency and for landowners. While Oregon diverts less than 10% of the surface water that's available, in a macro-management sense, the state and natural resource industries are doing a very good job measuring most of these diversions, as you saw today on their presentation. And they currently have several laws that allow this to be taking place, and you already heard from Doug Whitsitt, and I won't repeat those. But Oregon has been accomplishing adaptive management by strategically measuring water diversions that is needed to accomplish the goals basin by basin. And I think that's the essence here, is that so by basin to basin, it is already being done based on priority. And it's also being done in a cooperative manner. And while we can go forward and work in a cooperative manner, there's a lot of cost-sharing benefits that are allowed to the landowner. And if we go to a mandated statewide, I'm afraid a lot of those cost-sharing benefits will disappear. The proposed bill, I believe, will micromanage the state resources and result in cost-prohibitive administration for the agency and cost-prohibitive requirements from landowner and hamper environmental and restoration programs. And for an example, in my operation, I have 13 diversions from open ditch. And just real briefly, that because of the weeds involved in the water already, you cannot put a simple mechanical measuring flow meter in those pipes. And they require an electronic device. Where there's a will, there's a way. But it comes with a big cost. On my operation alone, I have quotes this week on the devices of $284,000, which is roughly 43% of my land value, to put these type of devices in. If you want recordable, state-of-the-art equipment, short of going out and once in a while being able to measure stem height on a head gate and using past experience. There are ways to measure on a one-time basis, but if you start doing a recordable measuring, it is cost prohibitive. Part of that, and just to make it very clear, while that sounds very high, I believe this is very typical throughout the state, where you aren't just pumping groundwater. Now, I have groundwater also, and on my requirements, I'm required to measure and report the usage on those. But that's easy, typically, because it's groundwater with no weeds in it, hopefully, and a mechanical device is available. But an electronic device requires power, and I'd have to run almost 3 miles of power line to be able to put these electronic devices in, if that is the micro level that this bill goes towards, and that's how I read it today. And the point is that it's prohibitive to micromanage the state's water resources, while I believe we're already doing a good job. This money, I believe, is much better spent in either new storage projects, conservation projects that I believe state has showcased up to showcase a good environmental programs that I think this would take money away from. And so I ask you not to vote in favor of this bill. I believe that my family's future is compromised with this, and I believe Oregon's compromised with this. And thank you.
Thank you for being here, gentlemen. We appreciate it. Are there any quick questions for this panel? Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm going to call up the next panel, and we also have people waiting on the phone, so I'm going to ask folks if they can limit their testimony to 2 to 3 minutes. Otherwise,
I'm afraid we won't get to everybody that signed up, but I want to make sure we get to at least folks that have traveled far. Bob Skinner, John O'Keefe, and Kurt Martin, if you can all come up together. That would be great. Thank you, gentlemen. Whoever wants to go first, just dive in, and just a reminder to state your name for the record, please.
I'll go ahead.
Go ahead, Bob. First.
If you don't pick, I'll just pick one of you. Go ahead.
Chairperson Dingfelder and Energy and Environment Committee members, good afternoon, and thank you for the opportunity to testify on HB 2564. My name is Robert M. Skinner. I'm a fifth-generation rancher from the extreme southeast part of the state, Jordan Valley. There's currently four generations living on our ranch, ranging from my 86-year-old young dad and mom to a four-year-old grandson. I'm currently a member of the Oregon Cattlemen's Association, the Farm Bureau, Water for Life, and Oregonians for Food and Shelter. Also, I was a member of the Owyhee Watershed 1010 Plan Basin Planning Committee. Our climate in southeast Oregon is often severe in the high desert, but my family, as well as our neighbors, have learned to live with what nature's dealt us. And our ranch has been awarded the conservation awards by NRCS, Natural Resource Conservation Service, and the Soil Conservation Service. It's also where a huge population of this state's wildlife calls home. I'm here today to speak in strong opposition to HB 2564. This legislation is an example of something people like myself have a very hard time understanding, why there are factions in the state that continuously attempt to deal us a hand that will unravel our way of life and add additional layers of bureaucracy that will in all probability make it even harder for us to continue in business in this state. In my many years of dealing with public laws and regulations in a part of the state where well over 75% of the land is publicly owned, I think it's important to point out this to this committee that we, the users of the state's water, are well aware of the fact that we need to have laws and regulations much like we currently have. However, to burden Oregon Water Resources Department with an additional layer when they admittedly can't even get done what they need to get done now is very dangerous and probably very expensive to the state of Oregon as well as its citizens. In my conversations with employees of the Oregon Water Resources Department, extreme frustration was portrayed to me when we discussed this bill. That person told me there was simply no way they could administer the law. Now, to tell you what many years of dealing with situations like this will no doubt bring to the state of Oregon as well as the water users. Number one, first of all, the additional workload will certainly produce a monstrous backlog of things that will not get done by the department. Second, this provides an avenue that will certainly allow groups to take the state of Oregon to court based on the fact that they are not administering the law. Third, the ultimate losers will be the taxpayer and families and businesses that try to make a living and care for the landscape in this state. This legislation is for sure going to cost the state immeasurably and create a legal quagmire that will benefit no one other than attorneys that will prosper from the endless stream of lawsuits. And in closing, we've constantly heard from our current administration in this state that they want to close the urban, rural, or east-west, however you portray that, and split that's dividing this state currently. Well, I drove well over 400 miles yesterday to come and tell you that this is probably the most divisive piece of legislation this state has ever seen. I urge you to not pass HB 2564 out of this committee. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you. And, gentlemen, if you have anything to add, I'm just going to ask you to be brief because we've got a couple other panels that are from a far away as well, and we want to make sure and get them up.
Thank you. Chairperson Dingfelder and the Energy and Environmental Committee members, for the record, my name is John O'Keefe. I am a rancher and water user in Lake County, Oregon. I am currently involved in an EQIP project funded by the NRCS to increase irrigation efficiency on my ranch. I also chaired the Goose Lake Advisory Council in the 1010 process. Thank you for this opportunity to address this committee on House Bill 2564. Our water rights and the continued use of those of the water those rights allow us to use are crucial to our continuing as ranchers, as well as the existence of our small community. As the Water Resource Department manages Oregon's water resource, it is very important that they get it right. I'm very concerned that the sweeping broad directive from this bill could cause problems, hardship, and regulatory burden while doing little to increase the efficiency of water use in Oregon. For example, the native meadow systems in eastern Oregon, these are examples of some of the highest quality wetlands in the world. These meadows are irrigated in the spring and early summer, much like the natural flooding occurring pre-settlement. I know that we irrigate these meadows within our allotted amount of water simply because we raise hay crops on these meadows regularly when the total stream flow for the period is less than the adjudicated water. Measuring the diversion and assigning it to acres would raise many problems. Water will leave a diversion, enter a floodplain, mix with water from another diversion point, cross multiple ownership lines still spread out on the floodplain, and then the tailwater will be picked up and used on multiple other properties. As I said earlier, we don't exceed the allowable use for the water right at acres, but to show that by measurement would call for a drastically altered system, a system that in its current form provides all the things we expect from wetlands. I know of systems that are supplied by multiple small free-flowing streams. In the spring, stream flows change hourly. The technology and logistics involved in measuring and reporting this type of system would add a huge burden to the family ranch that is such a good steward to the system. When the family ranch leaves due to ever-increasing regulatory burden, the developer to follow will not be such a good steward. A process exists now to require measurement if the Water Resources Department deem it necessary. It would surely be more cost-effective to the taxpayer and less burdensome to the family farmer to modify this procedure to fit current needs than to unilaterally require measuring at all points throughout the state. I also hesitate to call this an emergency. We could create an emergency for many small producers by treating this issue too hastily. I would urge the committee look to other options before embarking on a path that is going to burden many producers, while in many cases not giving enough information to move toward better water use. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony and for your written testimony as well. Appreciate that.
Members of the Energy and Environment Committee, Chairperson Dingfelder, I want to thank you for the opportunity to address this committee on House Bill 2564. And I'm going to apologize ahead of time because this is my first time doing
this. Okay.
And it's a little intimidating, but I do appreciate this opportunity.
Thanks okay. for being here. Appreciate it.
My name is Curtis W. Martin. My address is 51840 Oregon Highway, 237 North Powder, Oregon. And I am testifying in opposition to this act. I am president of the Powder Valley Water Control District, Baker County Livestock Association, co-chair of the Water Resource Committee for Oregon Cattlemen's Association, chair of the Powder-Brownlee Agricultural Water Quality Management Plan, more commonly known as 1010, and a board member on Water for Life. So I guess I'm involved in water. This proposed bill is redundant of existing law and water code. In our Powder River watershed, we have for decades done exactly what this bill asks: measure and record diverted water, water that is applied annually, and the location of use. Powder Valley Water Control District's points of diversion have accurate and working devices for recording and measurement of the stored water for Wolf Creek and Pilcher Creek reservoirs. We follow these management practices to assure equitable and correct application of this most precious resource for our arid side of the state. We know how to manage it for the most beneficial use, and that is supplying America and the world with the most wholesome, healthy food known. One side note, that before these two impoundments were constructed for water storage, Wolf Creek and Pilcher Creek were dry from July through September, even in plentiful water years. Now we maintain a year-round stream flow here. The adjudicated water from stream flows within our district also have the same formal measurement and recording. Our district manager works in cooperation with Oregon Water Resource Department Water Masters in ensuring that correct release and regulating of water is accomplished. Testimony to this fact is the lack of conflict between irrigators, fishermen, recreationists, and the multiple other uses within our basin. Every user, I want to emphasize that, every user is totally aware of how valuable this commodity is. For without it, we have no community, no schools, no economy, and most important, a lost culture that has been the backbone of our society. In conclusion, as I have testified, we already do what this bill wants. Rather than create more bureaucratic overlay and further deplete the fiscal integrity of the Water Resource Department, I would ask that you abandon this bill in favor of pursuing improvement in our current system and increased water storage for the manifold benefits that it would bring to all segments of our society, an abundant, safe, and usable resource for all of Oregonians. Thank you for this time and would be glad to answer any questions. Sincerely, Curtis Martin.
If I may beg to differ, sir, I don't think this is the first time that you've given testimony because you did a fabulous job. So
it is the first time.
Thank you. Are there any questions for this panel? Okay. Thank you so much. We appreciate you coming
Thank
here
you.
Today and sharing your comments. We are trying to get some folks on the phone. Ian, should I call up the next panel in the meantime? Okay, so while we're trying to connect with some folks in Eastern Oregon, I will call up Jeff, I think it's Anderson, Cheryl Martin, and Dennis Reynolds. Did I get that right? Okay. And if you have any written testimony, if you can hand that to Ian, please, and we'll also ask you to summarize if you can, especially if you're handing out written testimony, because we'll have that for the record. Thank you. Who would like to go first?
Well, I will. And normally at this time of the day, I'm facing ninth graders. So I'm equally a little off guard here. Yes, my name is Cheryl Martin, and I'm from North Powder, Oregon, on the east side of the state. I'm a middle high school science teacher, and I've been teaching for 21 years. I'm also a passionate sixth-generation rancher in our valley. I feel strongly enough about this bill that I took up a personal leave day to drive across the state to testify. shaky voice. I'm worried about my grandson's future in agriculture, our culture, not because we as farmers and ranchers have depleted the resources and abused the land. No, I'm worried about their future because of legislation proposed by urban legislators that will take away what we cherish most, our freedom to own our land and water and manage it the way that we know how. We know what we're doing, and we're doing it right. If we didn't, we wouldn't be 2% of the population feeding the world. We already measure our water through meters in accordance to the water legal rights. Each of our water districts had a board of directors and a water manager. There are legal state water masters monitoring our water usage. We're very careful stewards of our water because on our side of the state, it is our lifeblood. We live in an area that gets about 11 to 12 inches of precipitation a year. We have to take care of our water. In the late 1960s and early 70s, farmers and ranchers in our valley decided, my father included, that we needed to preserve and store runoff water. Wolf Creek Dam and Pilcher Creek Dam were built. Now, instead of spring runoff carrying away yards of soil along the banks, it is being stored in two beautiful reservoirs that allows the creeks to flow year-round, replenishing and creating wildlife habitat. Those two reservoirs are not only providing tremendous economic stability in our valley, but also more jobs, increased waterfowl populations, and are enjoyed by recreationists around the state. Our irrigation system was so well thought out that it is all gravity flow with no usage of electricity or fuel sources. That is being wise stewards of our land and our water. We know what we're doing. My grandsons are the eighth generation to live and ranch in our beautiful valley. When my great-great-great-grandfather came to the valley, a very large percentage of the people were involved in agriculture, and now today we have 2% of the world's feeding the world's population. We couldn't be doing that if we were not doing things right. Please, let us who have been doing this for generations continue to do things right. We don't need more laws, acts, or OARs enacted to tell us how to run the land and use the water. In addition to the redundancy of this House bill, the legislative concept of creating a committee to review the 1909 Water Code is useless and costly. We know what we're doing. I'd like to invite you and the rest of the committee to come visit our ranch in Eastern Oregon. We would like you to see the positive results of our love of and stewardship of the land. We are doing it right. Your future, our future, and the future of our grandchildren depends on it. Thank you.
Thank you. And we definitely would love to come out and visit, and hopefully, if we're out of here in a timely manner, we will make a trip out to Eastern Oregon and visit some of our committee members' districts. So we hope we can take you up on that. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jeff Anderson from Jordan Valley, Oregon, as well as Mr. Skinner, and I'm a fourth-generation rancher. Currently attending OSU right now, trying to get an ag business management degree in hopes of returning home and running our operation. I'm concerned with this House Bill 2564 because the cost that my ranch would have to endure would be financially backbreaking to our way of life. There would be no way we could continue. As many people have stated, presently the state has the resources to cost-effectively manage water management if need be. And be real quick here. All the ranchers are here to make a living for many years to come, hopefully. If we don't take care of our resources, we'd be shooting ourselves in the foot, so to say. We need water for our crops, crops for our cattle, and cattle to sustain our way of life. And I would hope that you would please vote no on this measure.
Thank you for your testimony. Thanks for coming here today. Is this your first time in the Capitol?
Yeah.
Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. My name is Dennis Reynolds. I'm from Grant County. The city is Canyon City, Oregon. The address is 308 Post Office Box, Canyon City, Oregon, 97820. I come here today quite on a sporadic notion, rather unprepared to address such a prestigious group, but only the importance of this issue to me drives me to make the 265-mile trip. I dislike redundancy, so I very seldom tend to prepare a prepared statement. So I've tried to glean from what I've heard here today and would like to comment on a couple things outside of those normal circumstances. First of all, why do I have a right to address water issues prior to becoming a county judge 12 years ago and taking the same oath of office that each and every one of you took? I was involved with the design, fabrication, and installation of head gates and measuring devices in open flowing water. I've had experience in Cipolletti weirs, standard rectangular weirs, submerged orifice, compressed and non-compressed, and fountain machines. One of the things I really want to get on the record is I want you to see how the citizens who are behind me see those of you making this type of law. The law is redundant. The law is, in my opinion, taking what is a consequence of bad practices and applying it uniformly to everybody regardless of how you've been performing. Believe you me, our county water master in Grant County, Oregon, has a lot of assistance with people reporting to him alleged perpetrations of the law. Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife and their screen inspectors repeatedly challenge the use of water use. Repeatedly, our water masters go to those ranches and check to see if they're in compliance, and I will assure you, at least in the John Day Basin, under our water master, those atrocities, those violations have been very minimal to non-existent. The problem is there are few water measuring devices. You heard testified here today that you have the right to mandate. That's already mandated in the statutes that we're supposed to have water measuring devices. The challenge I have with the proposed legislation is it goes beyond that and it requires reporting. Reporting is to reflect the duty, the amount of total water consumed. And 12 years ago, when I was actively involved with this, there were no cost-effective mechanisms and predictably consistent mechanical devices out there to put on a 1 cubic foot per second irrigation diversion that would be cost-effective for the user. So I would ask you to investigate the cost-effective solution, determine whether or not you have a cost-effective solution for everybody. But in the meantime, I would argue that the legislation is best left to that of punishment of those who are found in violation as opposed to general practice towards everybody. I also want to point out for the record that the state of Oregon Water Resources Department is required to report water use. They are a governmental entity and they are required to report. In the late 90s, they were awarded water rights for in-stream rights. They transferred their obligation to report water to Water Resources. Water Resources did a cursory analysis of and determined that it cost between $7 and $9 million to implement that. And the legislature granted them a reprieve from that obligation. So today, as you face those people who are behind me, you bear in mind that you've granted a group of individuals, that being the state of Oregon, the right not to report, while you're considering the option of having each and every one of them report. And I would draw your attention to your constitutional swearing and oath of office, Article 8, Section 12, where you have the obligation not to grant a right or privilege to any person or group of persons, but what you grant it to all.
Can I ask you to wrap up? Because we have some folks waiting
sure.
to get on the phone from Eastern Oregon.
Some of the questions beckoned deserving an answer before this decision is made is who will enforce the law? It's anticipated those of us in the field that find it will be excessively cost prohibitive. Secondly, we would argue that you have at least two other laws on the books, one called a pump test and one in an H2O water ownership forums. You know what's happening to those two laws? They're stacking up deeper and deeper on the desk of your water masters because there's nobody and no money to process them. How insulting it would be to those people who are behind me that this happens to follow the same avenue. So encourage the enforcement of measurement devices that exist on the law, but back away from this particular one because of the disruptive nature. You will find that when it's suggested that if they tell you how much water they're using and it's determined they're not using their title entitlement, I guarantee you they will use their entitlement, and then you'll see dry streams. It's just human nature. It's happened time and time again. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your comments. Appreciate it. Thanks for coming here. There's some questions? Yes.
Just very quickly, yeah. Ma'am, I just want to share with you, as a middle school teacher, you by far are the most qualified to address this committee.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Those photographs were from our Wolf Creek Reservoir, just so you could see how beautiful it is.
Thank you for bringing us here. Any other questions?
Representative Smith, as a middle school teacher, I don't know whether to take offense or not.
The teacher don't, as a legislator, yes.
Yes. I think I get it.
Great, thank you. And we have folks on the phone from Eastern Oregon, and then we have some other folks testify, and we'll try to get as many people that I think we've got everybody here who signed up that's over 100 miles.
Hello, this is Representative Dingfelder. Can you hear us?
Yes, we can.
Okay, thank you. And you are now on speakerphone, so everyone, if you can identify yourself for the record, and you have about 5 minutes, and if we've just had several panels here, including several panels from Eastern Oregon, actually, so we appreciate you calling in today.
Thank you, and we've probably got 14 people here. We had 4 people from Lowell County who were headed down but have turned back home. But we selected 4 people from Union and Baker County to speak, and the first is Matt Kearns from Baker County.
Great. Thank you so much. And also, we would encourage, if you haven't already sent in written testimony, you're also welcome to do that, and email is fine as well.
Thank you. We will do that.
But my name is Matt Kearns, and I'd like to thank you for setting this up so I don't have to drive so far. I am an owner-operator of an irrigated farm in Baker County. I have a degree in agricultural engineer. I am a professional licensed civil engineer and a certified water rights examiner. And I am representing Baker County Farm Bureau, the Oregon Wheat Growers League, and the Powder Basin Water and Stream Health Steering Committee. I'm going to talk about 4 items in relation to the bill: the magnitude, the cost, the output, and an alternative. Since I'm most familiar with Baker County, I will use it as an example. Are you able to hear me all right?
Yep, we can hear you just beautifully. Thank you.
Okay, first the magnitude. Baker County has priority dates starting in 1862 up to the present. I have no idea how many different water rights there are in the county, but the adjudication done in 1918 is a letter-sized document in excess of 2.5 inches thick with 3 to 10 different water rights per page. I don't know how many thousands of water rights that is. According to the Water Resources Department, there are 4,600 points of diversion in the county, with at least half being informal ditch companies with 3 to 15 ditch takeouts per point of diversion and a very large number of different rights per point of diversion. No rights get their full rate and duty. Water is rotated between senior rights late in the season, so rights only get the full rate when it is their turn in the rotation. Even if a right gets a full rate all season long, it will probably not get its full duty since the beneficial use is restricted to the growing season, and our growing season is short. Next item is the cost. It is estimated that a device at a point of diversion will cost the user a minimum of $1,500. I think this is a very conservative estimate. With 4,600 points of diversion, this will be a bill of $6,900,000 in Baker County. There's only one place this money could come from, and that is out of the operator's profit. Assuming most operators pay about 20% state and federal income tax, the decrease in tax dollars will be $1,308,000 in Baker County alone. In addition to the decrease in tax dollars, there is a cost associated with collecting data, correlating data, and putting the data in a usable form. I would estimate this cost will be a minimum of $200,000 for the county. The output: presently, the Water Master has all the authority necessary to require all needed equipment to allot and regulate water use based on Oregon revised statutes, permits, and certificates. Traditional laws will have no benefit in controlling rate and duty. Without total stream measurement, the measurement of stream losses, point of diversion measurements would be of no value. I also suspect that most of the data that people need is already available in numerous past studies. As far as alternatives, the Powder Basin has a water and stream health project currently in progress. The goal of this project is to manage water by storing and controlling and measuring release. The plan is to release water in the late summer to maintain necessary flows for stream health and to provide more water for agriculture and also energy. The water necessary for stream health discharge into the Snake River discharges at the Snake River to point above 11 hydroelectric dams on the Snake and Columbia Rivers, where it can then be used to generate electricity over existing generators. Past studies indicate that there are 365,000 acre-feet available for storage and manageable and controlled release, with 74,500 acre-feet already reserved for economic development. When complete, this project is a win-win situation. It will provide more energy, healthy streams, more food, flood control, and recreation. The reserved water is a result of a past legislation and exists throughout the state, but no one has entered.
Okay, Mac, we have about three more minutes here, and then I've got another panel waiting, so I'm going to have to ask you to... Okay, great.
The state has passed legislation and exists throughout the state, but no one has the resources to take the next step to put it to beneficial use. If you can modify this bill to help pass the... help place the reserve water under beneficial use, it would be a win-win situation statewide. Thank you.
Great, thank you. And if you would be willing to submit your or email your testimony for us, I think you had a lot of really valuable information in there that we'd like to share with the committee. If you could do that, that would be really helpful.
I think it's already been emailed to you.
Okay. Is it in that packet that we received?
There was.
Yes. Great, thank you so much. We really appreciate it, and I'm glad you're able to call in.
Thank you.
And we have...
My name is Jim Murchison. I'm a Eastern Oregon rancher and president of the Union County Cattlemen's Association. I am opposed to H. Bill 2564. As a water user in the production of crops and the raising of livestock, I question why more financial burden be placed on landowners and water users through the cost of measuring devices in general, not to mention installation costs, maintenance costs, repairs and vandalism, act of gods, reporting of data. Not only will H. Bill 2564 put a burden on water users, but also on state water resource departments. I question why necessary and emergency when we already have effective measuring devices of water uses. Like the old saying goes, if it's not broke, don't spend money fixing it.
Okay, thank you.
I've got some more, please.
Okay.
The law requires artificial use of water. 564 will not increase the production of crops and ensure that livestock water continues in an effective and safe manner. Landowners in general, and especially beef producers, are supporting a large percentage of Oregon's wildlife in the form of storage ponds, irrigation, and watering tanks. If measuring devices were required, a lot of these facilities would only be run seasonally with no benefit to wildlife. Every day, a new rule and regulations affect the livelihood of private businesses. Landowners and beef producers just want to be good stewards of the land and caretakers of their livestock. So we continue providing you with the best products and safe food you expect and demand.
I'm going to have to ask.
Are just becoming overburdened with the rules and regulations, the mental and financial stress has become unbearable. When is enough enough? As a private landowner and president of Union County Cattlemen, I urge a no vote on H. Bill 2560.
Okay, thank you, sir. And I'm going to have to ask if the last person can be 2 minutes, because we've got some other people waiting here to testify, and we're just about to shut down the committee.
Yes, my name is Matt Insko. I'm with the Union County Farm Bureau. I'm the current Union County Farm Bureau president, also a young farmer, less than 10 years in the business, and just wanted to state that because things like this just add to the problems for a young producer starting out. Just to reiterate some of the main issues, conservation is a big word that's always thrown out there. And there is no need for measurement for a farmer to want to conserve his water. If you put more water on, you're going to spend more power. You're going to increase your production costs, which is going to lower your overall productivity. So you don't need to, you know, by putting a meter on there isn't going to force me to conserve my water any more than I already do. Also, for at least the last 15 to 20 years, any irrigation well drilled in the state of Oregon already has to have a meter on it anyway. So what are we trying to accomplish here? Domestic wells in the state of Oregon at this time, I got this information from our water master. There is currently 210,000 domestic wells in the state of Oregon. That's rough. It's about 208-something if you want to be exact. At a minimum cost of $500 per well, that would be over $105 million. And that comes right out of everybody's pocket to pay for that. The state won't be footing that bill, I don't think. When there isn't a problem, let's not waste money trying to fix it. That is the main reason that the state cannot fund its schools properly, and already the Water Resources Department is overburdened with things. Okay. And
all right, thank you so much for testifying. We appreciate it, and I don't know if there's other people that can send their testimony in, if that's possible. Is there? So we are going to have to shut down the committee in about 4 minutes here, so, and I have another group that's going to testify.
Ma'am?
Yeah.
My name is Peggy Brown, and you can absolutely cut me off at 2 minutes if I could just have 2 minutes.
Sure. Okay, go ahead.
Hey, again, my name is Peggy Brown, and I reside in Union County in the Powder Valley. I'm a member of Oregon Farm Bureau Federation, and I'm the president for Baker County Farm Bureau, as well as I was a member on our local campaign advisory committee. I also reside and within the Powder Valley Water Control District, from which you heard today. I urge your committee to vote no on House Bill 2564. As you've heard, it's cost prohibitive. Matt Kearns' testimony actually showed that it was exponential in cost, not just cost prohibitive on a baseline. The regulation is already in place, and Oregon Water Resources Department, as you've been shown today, already has the necessary authority to implement measurement as you were hoping to be done with this bill. The solution is long-term water management, which water storage is a very big part of. Great examples of these organized efforts for long-term water management are the Powder Basin Water and Stream Health Committee and the Oasis Project in the Umatilla Basin. Additionally, we urge you to fund Oregon Water Resources Department's Oregon Water Supply Investigation, for which they have some money allocated that will help these grassroots efforts that can actually manage on a very tight, specific basis. Again, I thank you for your time. Does anybody have any questions of this group?
We have time for about one question, if anybody would like to ask a question. Okay, thank you so much. We really appreciate you calling in and appreciate the fact that you're able to send in your testimony as well. And if you want to send in any follow-up testimony, please feel free to do that.
Madam Chair, committee, thank you again.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Yeah.
I know time is limited, and I didn't want to testify, but I did want to share with the committee just a letter that we've garnered on House Bill 2564, if I can just have 30 seconds.
Can you hand it out, actually, instead of reading it to the committee?
I would, but I'd like the audience to hear it as well, if I could. It just says, a broad coalition representing diverse interests in Oregon has serious concerns about House Bill 2564, which is an unfunded mandate on water users throughout Oregon. The Oregon Water Resources Department currently has authority to measure, regulate, and enforce water use. Further legislation will result in micromanagement that is not economically feasible. There is not enough benefit for the public good from this legislation to justify the cost to Oregon Water's Resource Department, the water users, and the taxpayers of the state. Furthermore, many unintended consequences may result from this proposed legislation, and it needs careful consideration. Listed below are organizations, and this is what I want to put on the record, opposing House Bill 2564. This includes Christmas tree growers, the Cascade Policy Institute.
Representative Smith, can I interrupt you for 1 minute? Because Representative Jensen has to leave, and I just want to make an announcement, and then you can continue, okay? If you can hold on for a second. I just want to let folks know that there will be a work group. Representative Jensen is going to be the person who's heading up that work group, and I know many people in this room have already expressed interest in that, and Beth is going to be coordinating it. So I just wanted to make sure and get that on the record because Representative Jensen has to leave. Thank you.
I apologize for interrupting. This is just a lot of folks have traveled a long distance and haven't had an opportunity to speak, and so I want to make sure this committee understands the thoughts and feelings of a diverse group of folks. So, with that said, we've got the Christmas Tree Growers, the Cascade Policy Institute, the Manufactured Housing Community of Oregon, Oregonians for Food and Shelter, the Oregon Farm Bureau, the Oregon Cattlemen's Association, the Oregon Association of Realtors, the Oregon Groundwaters Association, the Oregon House Builders Association, Oregonians in Action, Northwest Pulp and Paper Association, Oregon Agricultural Alliance, and Water for Life. Anyway, okay. It's a broad group of folks who have extreme concern about House Bill 2564.
Thank you, Representative Smith. And if you want to hand that out to the committee members, that'd
be fine. I got
it on
record. Thank you.
And we have one final panel to come up. We have David Moskowitz and John DeVoe from Water Watch, and I'm going to also ask you if you could be really brief, 3 minutes, 2 minutes. Okay. Because we're losing committee members, unfortunately, who have other committees. If you can just get started, and we'll hand out the information. And
thank you, Chair Jane Calder, members of the committee. John Bell, Executive Director of Water Watch. I have two takeaway messages for the committee. One is waste not, want not. The other is what gets measured gets managed. And I think with respect to water in Oregon, those are two important messages. I've heard a couple things sitting here today. I'm not hearing much dispute that measuring water makes sense. In a perfect world, we would probably do it. What I am hearing, though, is that some people are saying it's cost prohibitive and labor prohibitive, but other people are saying we're already doing it. And one of those propositions can't be true. So I'd like to point that out to the committee. I've also heard a lot of testimony about the need for more storage, and to me that implicates some major issues about surrounding costs. We have proposals in the Northwest, such as the Black Rock Project up on the Yakima River, which is now estimated to cost around $6 billion. That is about the amount of the governor's 07-09 budget for public education. We have the Long Lake proposal down in the Klamath Basin, which was initially estimated to cost about $500 million. And then we have the Washington Storage Initiative, which allocated about $200 million up in Washington for storage projects. So when people say it's costly, I think we have to think in context and say compared to what. As far as testimony, why is this bill needed? Water use measurement is the cornerstone of effective water management and efficient water use. Measurement is simply a basic common sense tool that is necessary to provide sound data on water use throughout the state, to help water users stay within their legal limits, to use water more efficiently, and to help the state carry out its water management responsibilities. Increasing conflicts over water, increasing demand for water, limited supplies, transfers, in-stream flow protection, federal laws, adjudications, and smart economical farm management all necessitate water use management and reporting. Without measurement, there is no way to effectively discern whether water use is legal, inflated, or wasteful. And we need this device to plan for the future. It's simply a basic common sense tool for us to use to manage this public resource.
John, we're about to get kicked out of this room, so if you could just wrap up, and we have your handouts here, so appreciate that.
Water Watch would urge the committee to support 2564 for the following reasons. One, it provides increased accountability. Two, it provides equity amongst users. Some users are already required to measure, others are not. Three, it would generate improved water use efficiency. And four, it would encourage sound stewardship of this public resource. So I appreciate the opportunity to testify under these circumstances, and thank you for your attention.
Thank you. David, did you want to add anything?
No, thank you. But Water Watch stands ready to participate in the work group.
Okay, thank you. Well, with that, I would close the hearing on House Bill 2564. I appreciate everybody's patience who tried to work through as efficiently as possible, and apologize for having to be quick, but I wanted to make sure and especially get everyone from out of town. So with that, we'll close the hearing on House Bill 2564.